Oi, oi, I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Fenners. We're back together, son. How are ya?
Hi, Bully. Great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
This is a Crowd podcast.
Hello, I'm Geraint Thomas.
And I'm Tom Fordyce.
And you've just entered the Geraint Thomas Cycling Club, brought to you by Zwift.
Jump on your Zwift Hub 1 and jump into Zwift.
Welcome along.
Right, G, the waiting is over. The proper business of 2024 is about to begin because on Wednesday you were officially back racing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait, actually. It's been, it feels long, but it also doesn't since the last stage of the Vuelta, my last race of 2023. Looking forward to getting into it. It's a strong field. We got a decent team. And yeah, just looking forward to getting that number on the back and just sort of, racing my bike for 5 days.
So obviously we don't talk about the Vuelta, but we can talk about the Volta because that is the race we're talking about today, the Volta ao Algarve in Portugal. 5 stages. It's nice to see that there is a final stage finishing on top of Malhau, which is a great climb. And if people want to know more about this climb, where could they go to find out about it, G?
Well, it's in a mountains according to G, isn't it, Tom?
Certainly is.
But yeah, so it's quite a famous climb, really, isn't it? Like, Algarve tends to, well, maybe it used to be on the Saturday, but it finishes up there a lot in recent years. It's kind of along the same sort of lines as Wollunga, I guess. You know, it's one of those famous early season Finnish climbs. I'd say it's probably harder than Wollunga. But yeah, the race has a good sort of rhythm to it. You start with a sprint stage, you have a hard stage up to Foya, I think it's called, which is, we've done that plenty of times as well. Quite a hard little run in, bit technical, you know, a bit twisty, up, down, steep little climbs, descent, and then into the last climb. And the last climb's not too hard, but it's just a draggy sort of 6K. That's stage two. Stage three is another sprint. Then a 22K time trial, which is nice. Something to get our, it's good to get a time trial in, especially this year with myself, with the Giro as two big TTs in. So it's good to have a good hit out on that. And then, as I say, the last stage, 2 times up Malhau, similar to Wollunga as well. You do 2 times there as well, don't you? So, it's a tough race. Generally nice weather though, down in Algarve, south of Portugal. Can't get much further south, can you, in Europe? Well, actually, yeah, you probably
good question.
Can.
Sicily? Greece?
Yeah, maybe Greece. Yeah, it must be, mustn't it? Because it's quite warm down there. But anyway, it's south enough, isn't it? It's close to Africa. It's stone's throw from Africa. So, looking forward to it.
The Ineos lineup, it's a strong one. Arensman, Garner, Hajduk, Pidcock, Sheffield, Thomas, and Luke Rowe. It feels like this is the first time you have raced with Luke rather than podded with Luke for quite a long time.
Yeah. I don't think I raced with him last year, come to think of it, because he didn't do Down Under. Then I did Catalonia, which I'm pretty sure he didn't do. And then obviously, he didn't do Giro. He didn't do the warm-up race to the Giro. Yeah, I didn't race him last year, so it would have been 2022 and maybe the Tour in 22.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I know when it was. It was later than the Tour. You're right in the year.
Oh, hang on then. What else did I do after that?
Think about a race that you wouldn't instinctively think about. Usually this race is paired with another one and it's not in the usual location.
Canada.
Yes. Yeah. Montreal, September 22.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully Algarve will be better than Canada because that was a, I think the team, Yatesy was going well, but Myself and Luke, not so much. So hopefully a bit better than that.
Who is team leader? Is there no team leader? Is this a Geraint Thomas team? Is this a Tom Pidcock team? What's the plan?
It's certainly not a Geraint Thomas team. Although I'm feeling all right, but certainly not in winning shape. But looking forward for myself, go there, get stuck in, have a big workload over the 5 days, you know, get involved in the lead outs, get involved in a bit of climbing, try and do a technically good TT. Because again, I won't be, might scrape a top 10, I'm not sure, but I won't be fighting for the win as such. But with the other boys, Peepo's going really well. Saw that he got better through Down Under. You know, he's already got that in the legs. He did Adelaide World Cup alongside last week's guest, Emma. So he's going well. I've been training with Timon a lot in Tenerife. He's flying. He's lighter than what he was at the Giro. He has been for about 2 months now. So he's good. Magnus is also good. And then Pidcock, but with the TT, it kind of goes against Tom a bit there. So we got four good guys who can all get stuck in. So I think I'm not too sure what the plan is yet, but I think, you know, get stuck into every stage really, and then see where we're at after the TT on stage four. And the last day, hopefully we'll have a few guys in the mix and can see what we can do.
Well, that is exciting news that you're getting back racing. Some exciting news too from our favourite choir here at the GCCC, Call Might Be On Taff, because, they've recorded a new album. It's available to listen to now on Spotify and Apple Music. Of course, your father-in-law, Aid, is a proud member. How's he taking to his newfound recording fame? Has he gone big time?
Yeah, it was quite funny, the message he sent me. I'm just trying to find it now. He's like, "Hi, Gek, Call Might Be On Taff have made Spotify. Our new album is on there." Blah, 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 telling me about it then. Well, I just laughed at the fact, have made Spotify, like there's some sort of criteria to, I think any Tom, Dick and Harry can get onto Spotify, right? But you know, bless him, he's buzzing off it. So, but they are a good choir, to be fair. He's just lucky there's 40 other people to drown him out. But no, get on there and give him a listen, give him a shout out.
Nice. I'm going to start my mornings, I think, with the sound of Call Might Be On Taff. I think that's the way to get me going in the morning. Other news from our GTCC members, two contrasting rides to shout out this week. Firstly, Richard Thorpe, who repped his beautiful GTCC jersey while riding from Auckland to Clark's Beach in New Zealand, a beautiful 131-kilometre ride. And then there's the GTCC Herefordshire Club, which is one of our best, I think, who braved the conditions this weekend, had to deal with flooded roads on the banks of the River Wye. Well done for getting out there, despite the weather, guys. Right, this week's guest, Carlos. You did well to line him up. I know he was on the training camp with you, G. He doesn't do many interviews, and I found our chat with him really interesting.
Yeah, it was, and then the couple of weeks I spent in Tenerife is the longest I've sort of spent with him, and yeah, at first you can kind of think, trying to put this politely now, but he wouldn't be one of the boys first on the list to go for a pint with, put that way. But then after spending this 2 weeks with him, he certainly opened up a bit, and he's got a bit of that, you know, that killer in him really. And it was good to see, and definitely bonded, definitely a bit closer to him now, and hopefully looking forward to lining up in the tour with him. But it was a good chat, and it was great to have him on. I owe him a few coffees now, but there's plenty of time to reimburse that.
Right, let's bring on Carlos. Well, we have got a bit of exciting news for our fellow GTCC members. We have partnered with Ketone IQ.
We have, Tom. Do you know what it is?
You got to help me out here. I know it's something to do with ketones, but I don't know what ketones are. Come on, what is it?
Ketones are basically a different energy source for your body, really. So we use them in the team, mainly for performance and recovery, you know, kind of go hand in hand, really. But you can also use them for cognition. That's kind of a posh word, isn't it? But it's for like focus, really. So, you know, I know of some guys sat in an office, take it and helps them well, focus basically for work or whatever they're doing.
This sounds potentially very handy for a man who, like you, likes cycling, or like me, likes talking and writing about cycling and sometimes needs to focus a little bit more.
Yeah, you could definitely do with it every now and again, Tom. But they've kind of been around for a few years now. Everyone kind of thought that we were taking ketones like years and years ago, but it took us a while to actually even start it because the team wanted to do a lot of research and read papers and, you know, make sure it was doing what it says, basically. But first kind of heard about it, HVMN from Cam in LA. He was raving about it.
Oh, Cam Worth.
Exactly, yeah. And you know what he's like. He talks a lot. So you got to take everything he says sometimes with a pinch of salt. But to be fair to him, this was one time when he was actually talking a bit of sense.
Nice. So give me a bit more detail here. Let's get down to nitty gritty. When do you use it?
You can use it at the start of training. It can kind of help you there or for recovery. We use it primarily for recovery after the stages and stuff. But another way of fueling your body, really. And it tastes a lot better. A couple of years ago, they used to be horrible, absolutely horrible. But now they're a lot better.
That is great news. I was going to ask about the flavour, because let's be honest, something can be really, really good for you. If it tastes disgusting, you're going to do it once and never again.
Exactly.
So if you want to try HVMN's Ketone IQ, then visit hvmn.com/GTCC for 30% off your first subscription order.
Yes, that's hvmn.com/GTCC for 30% off your first subscription order. Go on, give it a try.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise. The island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's guest, Tom, has been a teammate of mine for 4 seasons, which is pretty mad, actually, because he's still only 22. Won the Spanish road race Nationals in 2022, won a stage of the Tour de France last year in 2023. So a big pleasure to welcome to the pod Carlos Rodriguez. Carlito, welcome, mate. Thanks for coming.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for coming. We've got quite a few Spanish listeners, I think, because a lot of people were asking to get you on. It was in my head to get you on at some point, but yeah, the Spanish folk wanted Carlito, didn't they, Tom?
Yeah, they did. And I have to say, Carlos, you have got the smartest haircut of anyone to come on the GTCC. Like, I'm quite used to Geraint. I like Geraint's hair, but obviously his wife cuts it from your lid is looking very, very sharp. Gee, you're next to Carlos. You just describe Carlos's sharpness, please, here.
Yeah, it's pretty much the opposite to mine. It's just precise, I'd say, is a word to sum it up compared to mine. Mine's a bit more el natural. just wake up and get on with the day. Cracking job, though, by my wife, Sar, obviously.
Yeah, but she does a very good job.
That's what makes the world go round, eh, Tom? Everyone's
yes,
different,
exactly.
So. But obviously, as I said, the Spanish wanted Carlos, so I've given the Spanish quite a bit of stick, or at least they're racing quite a bit of stick. So, you know, we thought we'd do a nice thing for the Spanish and get him on for everyone.
I like it. It's like a karmic rebalancing, isn't it? So, Carlos, let's start with your start at Ineos, because you joined the team when you were only 18. You came straight from the junior scene. And we're sort of used to that idea now. But when you did it in 2020, it was a bit more unusual, wasn't it?
Yeah, Renko was the only one who had done it before. I did it also at the same time as Quinn Simmons from Trek. But before that, no one. Just
when was Remco then? The year before you?
Yeah, 19.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because even like before that, there was the odd one, wasn't there? Like, didn't Pizzato do it? And I don't know, Cunego won the Giro when he was 22 or something. But yeah, now it's like the norm, as you say, Tom, isn't it? Like, well, with our team, last year we had
Michael and Josh.
They were straight from junior. And this year as well.
AJ and Theodore.
Yeah. So in the last 2 years, we've had four guys come straight from juniors. And quite a few other teams have done it as well, haven't they? So
yeah,
that's the way it's going. But I was speaking to off topic slightly, but you know Matteo Jorgensen?
Mm-hmm.
So American guy, he lives in Nice. I did a ride with him and he was saying how he knows some 15-year-olds that are doing lactate testing.
What?
And all sorts. So SRMs and so, or power meters, whatever you call them. But it's just a new landscape, isn't it? Like, and if 14, 15-year-olds are training like that, you know, have training peaks, you know, training with power, it's only natural that they're more developed and ready to get straight into it, really, isn't it? So, but Carlito, you were one of the first to do it. Was that daunting? Was that an easy decision or was it?
Well, for me, for sure, I wanted to be professional, but I didn't speculate at all. Maybe I was planning doing similar to Egan, because I was in junior, I started talking a little bit with Giuseppe Alquadro, that is our the manager baker we have in common. And maybe I was planning on going to a Conti team. Mm-hmm. That was already like big thing for me, becoming professional. And then at some point in the future, join the team. But yeah, at some point during the year, he told me, oh, maybe it's possible that you can go straight into the team. So yeah, when they told me I had the opportunity, I didn't doubt twice. Mm. Like, I knew it was going to be difficult. I was used to winning or being in the front in the races, fighting for the victory. And I knew that there would be some years where I had to suffer, and mentally maybe it was going to be hard not being able to be in the front, but I knew that I was here to learn from you or the rest of the guys, trying to become as professional as possible, and then hopefully towards the future I could use that knowledge in my advantage.
Mm. Yeah, because the team looked after you well as well, didn't they? Like, they didn't race you, or they didn't put you in loads of big races. They kind of really...
No, even the training. I did it like little by little, increasing the load, the intensity. So yeah, I think it was a very smart decision from my side, also because all the people who were surrounding me from the team, because they were taking care of me and not rushing anything, just taking my time to develop as a cyclist.
Yeah. I think that's the big thing now though, Tom. It's like, not necessarily of our team, but teams in general, like it's almost like boom, they want them to be the next Remco, you know, like, and win straight away, which, well, it's not possible, is it? Because if there's 10 turning pro straight out of juniors, they're not all going to be winning. You know, only one person can win. So I think the way Carlos was sort of developed and, just steady away type thing. And because he's a clever lad as well, Tom. Like, he was studying for, well, what were you studying at the time? Engineering?
Yeah, mechanical and electrical engineering.
Wow.
I started a double degree. If it wasn't much just doing one, I was doing twice. Not twice, two at the same time.
So you were, I guess, in that crossover period, you're riding on the world tour, but you're having to write essays about engineering at the same time.
Yeah, in some training camps, I was having lunch with a computer next to me because I had to did some lessons or whatever, or do some exams. I had to return from training earlier. But it was too stressful for me at some point, because everything I do, I want to do it as well as I can. If I can get the maximum score, I want to get the maximum score. I'm not happy with just passing the exam. So yeah, maybe it was too much for me.
Oh, fair play. So I'm guessing you've stopped that now then.
Yeah. The first 2 years I was pro, I was studying, but then I decided to stop and try to be as good as cyclist as possible and enjoy it as much as I can. And then when I retire, I can decide what I want to do in the future.
Someone tells me, mate, we were just talking before. So you've done, this is your fifth year pro. So if you do as many as me, you've got 14 years left. Mate, the money you're going to be making, I don't think you're going to need to do engineering, mate.
I don't care. To be honest, for sure, money gives you maybe
options,
ways to be more comfortable and do whatever you want, but it doesn't make you happy. And also, imagine I make enough money to don't have to worry about it anymore, but still you want to do something that you
sure.
like.
Yeah.
You're not going to be just standing in your sofa all day. Maybe for 1 week it's okay to recover.
Oh, 1 week's
but...
enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Too much already. he's a wise boy though, isn't he, Tom? He's you can see why he's been successful so early on.
Well, you just seem to have done a lot at a young age, Carlos. So I'm just thinking about your pro wins. You had four pro wins. You had that stage in the Basque Country in 2022, Spanish Nationals that G referred to in the intro, and the stage at the Tour. And then you had a win in Wales on the Tour of Britain. I don't really want to make you choose a favourite, but was there one that stood out for you more than the others?
I think everyone knows that I'm going to say the Tour
in Wales.
Yeah, it was because the Tour is the race I always wanted to do, the one I was always wanting to watch on TV, and being able to be there and especially winning on stage was incredible. But
the Tour is the Tour.
Yeah, it is. But all four victories, as now I only have four, I kind of remember everyone, every stage, like being special. They are all like, I don't know, I have good memory from all of them.
Yeah, talking about the Tour one though, I remember watching this because it was a great win, that was, because we went over the last climb and what was it? Like, I don't know, like it was less than 10K to the finish, but it was downhill to the finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe around 10K from the top
from
of the climb and then 2K flat in the bottom.
Yeah, so basically...
with corners, so...
Yeah, Carlos gets distanced over the top. You weren't far behind, were you? Like a handful of seconds or...?
I don't know, but the thing is that they were stopping in the front, kind of looking at each other for the bonus seconds.
Yeah.
That also helped me a little.
So obviously in front there's Pogacar, Vingegaard, who's in... Well, who had yellow at that point? Jonas was in yellow?
Yeah.
What stage was it? 12 or something? Like,
no.
Late.
14 or 15th, I don't know. I don't remember now.
It was...
I just remember...
Towards the last week anyway. So.
Yeah, it was Saturday. I remember it was Saturday.
And I think Yates was there as well. Adam Yates
was
a teammate of Pog. And... anyway, you see it coming back, and as Carlos said, they were messing around a bit because, you know, bonuses were still a thing at that stage. You know, it was still super close. Carlos catches him and you're like, straight over the top, mate, straight over the top. And he does, boom, straight over the top, like into a corner, like proper rails it around this corner. I don't think you could have gone any quicker. Well, if you had, you would have been on your ass. Like,
yeah, maybe. Maybe.
And those boys caught them completely off guard. Yeah, they were looking at each other a bit, as happens in the end of a race, and won the stage. Incredible win, especially like, yeah, with beating those guys as well. Mountain stage, must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was. Still, like, I think I don't believe it, I do it. When I was in the front descending, I was like, I'm leading the race, and... Maybe I can win the stage and about to win it. So
talking about his other wins, Tom. Did you see the Basque one? I was at this race.
Well, yeah, tell me. I didn't see this.
Oh, this was the best win for me. It was just like, because it was funny almost. Because who was it? It was
Marc Soler.
So Marc Soler is riding for GC or something, and he attacks like 50 odd K to go.
No, more from the beginning.
More.
well, maybe we were like 40k into the stage because there was big fight for the break.
Yeah. I was suffering like a dog from at the back. Don't make the break. Carlos is there. And then is a big great. And then he goes from that with you.
We were like five guys, maybe. But yeah, no one wanted to collaborate with him.
Yeah.
So we kind of start attacking each other and at some point it was four of us. In a descent, one guy crashed, and then it was kind of hilly, and all the climbs mark was going full.
Yeah.
And Kenny Ellison was still with us, but Mark dropped him.
Yeah.
And then it was just the two of us.
So basically, because Mark Soler is riding GC, no one wants to ride with him because they know they're going to be chasing behind. So it's kind of like, well, what's the point in wasting our energy if they're chasing you anyway? Like, if you're not here, we can actually fight for the stage. But he just keeps going, as Carlos says. And then Carlos has just sat on him, just sat on his wheel.
And because he's riding, we had Danny for the general classification.
Danny, Carlos's teammate, was riding for GC. He ends up winning, actually. Anyway, like, Carlos has just sat on him and he just kept going, didn't he? Just riding. Did he speak to you? Did he say anything?
He told me, if you arrive with me, I let you win. And I told him, you're riding for GC and I have a teammate who is riding for GC as well. I can't help you, sorry.
Yeah.
But
and how far do you reckon you were sat on him and he's pulling full gas? How many Ks?
100K, maybe.
And then, so funny.
Maybe not 100K, but almost.
Yeah. Then they get to this finish. It's a bastard of a finish, wasn't it? Real steep thing.
Yeah.
And
the climb before, I went full because they were catching us.
Ah, okay, yeah. And then Carlos just like, boom, went away, won the stage. And thank you very much, Mark Soler, basically. So,
thank you for the ride.
Yeah.
Thank you for getting...
Did you feel bad? Was there any part of you that thought, well, this is a bit...
I didn't want to... For sure, it's nice winning, but it's not the best thing to know that you took advantage of
I wouldn't feel bad, but I can see why it'd be a bit like, oh, this is a bit like... Did you get any... Mark Soler's fans give you any abuse? I don't remember there being anything.
I think
but
some people maybe put in some comments and say, no, you are ungrateful to Mark. What I said already in the finish, I feel bad for you. But sorry, I couldn't. That's cycling and it's a team sport, not only individual.
So
I said thank you also. So
I had a similar thing, Tom, when I was a junior, right? Welsh Nationals, big race. It was up in North Wales and there was a guy from Deeside. Can't remember, but he was English as well, I think. So I didn't, but he was racing this regional nationals. So and I attack and he's like on me and he's like, oh, just let me sit on you. I won't sprint. And this was, okay, it's not 100K, but it was a good 50-40K or something. So I just keep going. Get to 200 meters to go. I look under my arm, start seeing this front wheel coming on my right. And I'm like, you prick. Like, this is not happening. To get out the saddle, start sprinting, beat him. But I was like, oh. Afterwards, I'm like, what the hell was that all about? And I don't know. He's just like, oh, you know, it's just a race, lad. He was from Liverpool. You could probably tell.
Sri Lankan, yeah.
Yeah, it's mad out some of the tactics sort of play out in cycling sometimes, but
that sounds fair to me though. Like, clearly Mark Soler in that situation, Carlos, he's going to wish that he didn't have to go solo for that far, but he's been around the block, he knows how it works, and he knows that it's not like you're trying to stitch him up. These are the rules of road racing. You can't help him because you have a teammate. It's, you know, he might not like it, but he knows how it is.
Yeah, and maybe at some point in the future, I am in the same position as he.
I don't think you would be. I think you're more clever. You just sit up. Like, why did he do that? Like, I don't mean to like bag him now, but why waste all that energy? Like, he was obviously really good. He had really good legs. Like, sit up. It's not going to happen. Like,
and I think behind they told me that they were pulling quite hard. No,
it was hard. Yeah, trust me, it was hard. Yeah. But and I assume we're talking about his wins, Tom. We got to talk about Caerphilly, no?
Oh, we have, yeah. Queen's Stage. A climb you know so well.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, basically, you know, the top of this climb, you turn right to go back to Caerphilly. Mm. If you go left, you basically end up in Cardiff, centre of the universe, mate. It's where me and Luke are from. Pretty much, you go down that hill, you'll be in Luke's house within 2 minutes. Well, you went over his house, didn't you,
for a barbecue or something? Yeah, after the stage.
Yeah. So, but that must have been a good feeling, though, winning up there. It's a tough climb, no?
Poof. Especially after pushing hard and having Gwout behind and all the...
That was a Marc Soler moment almost, wasn't it? It was a long, like it was, it wasn't quite the same, but it was the last stage and you went a long way to go, full gas. Wout van Aert's got the jersey, Jumbo Chase in full.
Yeah, I lost some seconds the day before because I crashed.
Mm-hmm.
But then Magnus was still close on GC, and we had to try something to beat Wout. So yeah, the tactic was that I went full to put Jumbo under pressure,
mm-hmm.
and then see what happened. And in the end, I could get the victory. So
yeah,
good for me. But I suffered that day also. Caerphilly Mountain was hard, I can tell you.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. You
not
did it
only,
twice.
Not only the climb, but also the downhill or the flat. Well, I was going full all the time, so...
Because yeah. Stevie Williams was with you as well, right? The Welsh lad, just one tour down under.
Yeah.
When did you drop him?
On the first climb, on the first lap around Caerphilly.
Ah, okay.
The first...
Yeah,
just before the top, because I saw they were coming behind like sharks, and I said, I don't want you to bite me. Or
and the atmosphere of Caerphilly Mountains, is that just like the tour, no?
Yeah.
Mm.
It was full.
Mm.
All the people cheering.
Quality.
It gave me energy.
Nice. You talk about it in your book, Mountains Are Called. Actually, no, it's in Great Rides According to G, Caerphilly, isn't it? Because is Caerphilly the one that used to have the burger van on the top, which is now actually a permanent cafe? The burgers were that good.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so used to do that a lot as a kid. You could go up it, I don't know, four or five different ways. Didn't do it from Caerphilly, the way the race goes up too much, because that's the hardest way by far. But yeah, it's literally like it used to be from my mum and dad's house. You could start the bottom of it within 5 minutes. So up one of the ways. So yeah, it holds a lot of memories for me.
Hey, I'm Elliot Jackson.
And I'm Rob Warner.
And we want to keep you company on your next ride.
Once you finish listening to Geraint, the Tour de France winner, of course.
That's right. This is Just Ride, where we hear stories from some of the most interesting people in the world of cycling.
And in fact, we just had a chat with someone you might know.
What the hell am I doing here? Winning this race? Is that French guys and Germans and Spaniards win it, you know?
Yeah.
Welshmen from Cardiff, you know? So my wife's nan always used to say to me, Why did you stop with 150 metres and let that Cavendish guy come past you?
Yeah, that's right. We absolutely loved having G join us for an episode of Red Bull's Just Ride.
To hear our full episode with G and lots more, search for Just Ride in your favourite podcast app.
We'll see you there.
The thing that seems to link all your wins, Carlos, is... like an ability to work out the tactics and to make your move at the right stage. And when you get to G's age, that all makes sense to me, but you're 22. So where does that part of your racing brain come from? Were you a kid who just watched loads of cycling? Have you picked the brains of people like Geraint as you've made your move into the World Tour?
Watching other people, and also it's not the same, but experience from other categories, not just being pro, is completely different, but you also kind of learn some tactics, how to move. And also it's not just the ones that work out. There are many that don't. And the wins are the ones that that work out in the end. Maybe you try 99 times and just one gets you the result.
It's one of those things as well. When you're on a roll, you know, it's just like last year, obviously, with Carlos was a good year. Obviously, with the tour, fifth in the end, was fourth until he had that, well, puncher, wheel crash, whatever happened. We won't go into it. But yeah, and then going to Tour Britain, feeling good, having another little crash, and then winning that stage, it all comes together, doesn't it?
What is it, G, when you look at Carlos? I'm not going to say you're long in the tooth, but you've been around the game a little bit. When you look at Carlos, what is it to you as someone who's been there, who's been through the World Tour for what, 17, 18 years now? What is it that makes Carlos stand out?
I think he's obviously a clever kid. So, sorry, kid. Clever man.
I don't take it as a...
insult. That's okay then. He's a clever kid.
I appreciate it. Still feel young.
You know, not just academically, but, you know, he switched on when, like, when it comes to training, inquisitive, you know, nutrition, you know, all that type of stuff, you know, understands all that, understands the body, why he's doing X, Y, and Z, which goes a long way. But I think the main thing, which you'd kind of be, don't take offense to this either, though, but he's a hard lad, you know. If you were to walk into a pub now, you'd, you know, he's got his nice hair and his glasses and stuff. You wouldn't think he's like, but he's a tough cookie, 100%. Like, because we try not to talk about crashing, do we, on this pod? But in the Vuelta, when was it? 22? Yeah, it must have been. It was like, he had this insane crash, all cut up, his back, like, his back was red more than it was. He didn't have any skin on his back, basically, put it that way. Skinned himself properly. That crash in the Tour last year when he landed on his face, the coming at the end of a Grand Tour like that, when you're physically, emotionally, mentally tired, to still get up, battle on, yeah, just a real tough cookie. And you know, you see it in training, you know, can go deep, can really get stuck in. So got all the attributes to go all the way, and obviously he's been fifth already in the Tour, so 22. You know, his progression has been, you know, super fast. Well, no, it has been. Obviously, these days, as we said already, like, people like Remco come in and start winning. You think, like, that's the norm, but it's not. But, yeah, bags of potential.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to turn that around, Carlos. What about you from your perspective, Carlos? You've been around Geraint now for 4 years. What have you learned from him?
I think he's an example for all the kids that are joining the team, how he's been at the top for such a long time, never giving up. Or he's always, when he has a goal, he's always there in the end. For last year, he had all these setbacks, and then in the Giro, he was almost the winner. And I don't know. I see him also as a professional guy that knows how to sacrifice. He, for sure, no one enjoys sacrificing himself too much. But if he has to do it, he does it. And yeah, he's an example for all of us, and someone we look up to.
Well, that's nice, isn't it? What a nice little love triangle we got going on. But to be fair, you don't have lunch with me, though. Today, the other day I had lunch on my own because I did a little bit extra. Today I was on my own again. I'm taking it a bit personally now, mate.
Yeah. Well, maybe we don't like you very much, but we don't tell you.
Today, though, Tom, was proper Spanish style. So 1:30 is lunchtime, right? We put our order in as well just to speed up the process. I get there 25 past one, actually, because I was quite hungry. And we were doing a podcast at 2. So, sat there, ticking by. We haven't even had any water. You know, they bring out the bread at about 2:15. I was like, oh, man, I'll have a bit of bread. Anyway, it gets to like 5:00. I'm like, boys, I've got to go. I've got to do a podcast now. So, I end up coming, doing it. as when I came back down, it must have been, yeah, just before three, you were just finishing, weren't you?
Yeah.
Proper,
they just arrived and they just brought me the fruit. Yeah.
Proper Spanish style.
Yeah, no rush, you know, we're here on the top of a volcano, like,
chill out. Was the worst day. I think they had just opened the kitchen. And everyone had order or something. So the FDJ guys were there.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe taking all the orders, but anyway, we had already asked them and it was just bringing the stuff to the table.
Yeah, not very good planning, is it, Tom? Like, you've got a load of orders in, you know they're coming at 1:30, but you still open at 1:30. But anyway.
That's poor.
At least we could have lunch.
Yeah, we still ate and we survived. First world problems.
So when you get off, Teddy, at the end of this training camp, Carlos, talk us through your year because you're going back to the tour once again.
Yeah, after this training camp, I go almost straight into racing again. I start the season in Jaén and then it's going to be...
That's a one-day race, right?
One-day gravel race. Mm. Kind of practice for the tour, getting ready for the ninth stage.
Do you like gravel? Have you done much before?
I've done twice, tried the...
Okay. How'd that go?
First year, it was good for me, I think. I tried to follow Tadej for some case, but I found out it was not possible. Then got caught and I was empty. And the last year, it wasn't so good. I crashed and I broke my collarbone. But I enjoyed it. And that's the main thing. Yeah. I enjoy gravel, like how you feel on the bike. Maybe it's a bit more dangerous for sure. And you have more risk of punctures and all this stuff. But
what are your thoughts on that being in the tour?
It's cycling. Mm. So, yeah. You need to do some time trial. You need to climb. You need to survive the echelons or the flat. And if you have some gravel sections, you need to go through them. So,
yeah. I think it's a load of bollocks, but there we go. Yeah.
Carlos, thinking about the tour, what have you learnt from your previous escapades in France? What do you take into this year that you might not have had before?
Well, this year is going to be different because last year I was there more to learn how the race was, and this year maybe I have more responsibility to perform, but lessons I take that is for some, it's maybe the most important race, but in the end it's another race and you need to do the same things you do at the other races. Prepare yourself as well as you can and try to give your best every day. There's nothing.
Hmm. It's a good opportunity in the other races as well, though. Like, I think for someone like Carlos, as we said, 22, his season what happens in the tour doesn't really, it's not a good or a bad year how the tour goes, put it that way. You know, you do Paris-Nice, right? Basque, you know, a lot of Dauphiné. You know, there's a lot of chances to go for results there as well. You know, like when I look at myself, like what I did, kind of use those races and win some of those races, or at least, you know, be up there in GC, and you're just constantly learning. The more you do, the more you're in that fight, the better I find and I found. So I think for Carlos now, it's like obviously the tour is the main thing and performing there is the ultimate. But there's so much more that he can go at as well along the way as stepping stones. And it's exciting. Like for me, it's exciting to have someone like Carlos in the team because obviously I do the Giro and then I go to the tour and try and be as best I can, whatever that is, it is. But having someone that you genuinely believe can perform, like for sure you can podium this year, which is super exciting. You know, someone so young as well, just signed 3 years with the team?
4 years.
4 years with the team. So, you know, it's a real good project, sounds a bit naff, doesn't it? But kind of is for the team, you know. It's like, let's get this guy, see how far he can go, you know. We got quite a few of them, to be fair, as well. There's a lot of young, good guys in the team, you know, Magnus, different rider, different stage of his career and stuff. But it's exciting. It's exciting to be a part of that now, especially for me, you know. Let's face it, in the twilight of my career, Tom.
Twilight can be a great time of day.
Yeah, it's the most beautiful time.
Yeah, it's the golden hour. It's what the photographers and the cinematographers refer to as.
Yeah, and me now, being a photographer, Tom.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, a part-time photographer. So, that's exciting and plenty to go at.
Okay, Carlos, here's maybe a difficult question because you haven't been there yet. You haven't had to push yourself. But when you rode the Tour last year and, as G says, you finished fifth, you can see ahead of you, can't you? You can see the gap between you and the podium, and you can see the gap between you and the winner. So with your brain, with your excellent tactical brain and your love of cycling, what do you think you need to close that gap between you and the top step of the podium?
I need to improve compared to last year in everything, basically. I need to climb better to be closer to them or distance more the other guys. Also on the time trial, I need to get faster and if possible also get a bit more punchy towards the finish of the races to be able to fight for bonus seconds or at least not losing any time and being close to them.
Yeah, I think just time as well, Tom. I think just another year older makes a massive difference for someone like Carlos. Like, he's not, you know, you see some young guys, Stannard, for instance, he was developed early, you know, or Josh Tarling.
He's a unit.
Yeah, Josh Tarling, big, you know, you can tell he's ahead of his age. You know what I mean? Like, if he's to do a biological test, he'd be like 24, you know, rather than 18. Whereas I'd be like 28 rather than 37. but, you know, with Carlos, you can just tell just as more endurance, more training, he will naturally progress. Obviously, he has to keep doing the right things and be professional and on it. But I think he'll naturally close that gap anyway. Plus, you know, as we've said before, extra racing, learning, it's all good, mate. It's all plenty to go at. And we got a good, strong team as well. Like, it's a young, you know, Carlos, Tom, Pidcock, Big Ben. I'm not saying all these are definitely going to ride, but that sort of tour, sort of group, well, they rode last year as well. Magnus, you know, it's kind of like what we had in Sky back in when we started, like that nucleus, a real strong, young core, which can really go develop, grow a real good bond and, yeah, light shit up, basically.
Well, Carlos, it's going to be amazing watching you as you continue your journey through the World Tour and fascinating to watch how you go at the Tour this year. If G is getting boring at mealtimes, just go and sit with someone else. I think that's the only solution. You don't need to pander to his ego just because he's in the golden hour of his career. Just go and sit with someone else.
No. I enjoy being next to him. Yeah. I am actually next to him at lunch.
Sat next to each other. Yeah. And we always sit in the same seat from the first night. I just naturally do it. I don't know if that's the same with everyone. I think it is, but it's that routine, isn't it? You could take comfort in that. Same thing. But anyway, we've kept you too long, mate. Thanks for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Pleasure was mine.
And we're glad to give the Spanish people something back, you know, because they gave me sod all. No, the people are good. It's just Vuelta, mate. But anyway, yeah, nice one.
Thank you.
He is a slow burner, Carlos G, isn't he? I can see why you might not have had him on the top of your list for a pint at the start, but he's such an interesting character when you started chatting to him, started finding out his motivation. You definitely get that sense of a steely core inside him.
Yeah, definitely. He's a big thinker as well. He's intelligent, as we covered as well. And he's definitely just got that real grit and determination underneath it all, which takes a while to come out initially, as I said before, but... No, real good guy, great guest. And yeah, as I said, lining up at the tour with him will be, well, hopefully we'll both be there in top shape. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And I guess if you are going to ride a grand tour with a teammate, there's two points to being on a training camp. There's the workload that you're doing out on your bike, but also there is getting to know someone, isn't there? And you are professionals and you would ride hard for whichever teammate you were given. But if there is a bond between you that goes beyond just being teammates on a team, that's got to help a little bit as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Like, speaking from experience, there's been riders in the past where, you know, the language barrier, they're totally different to you or to me, and there's no real like bond there. And of course you ride for them, but it's totally different to then riding for your best mate like Swifty or someone. And then they're the two extremes, and you know, the closer you can get to the sort of good levels like myself and Swifty, the better, really. And I think like we've banged on about it quite a lot, but the Giro squad last year definitely had a real good sort of bond, and that was what made it fun as much as anything, even though we had so much bad luck. You know, I think we spoke about it when Dupluski came on, but it still got fond memories, even though so much crap went down and it ended in such a rubbish way as well. But it all can still look back at it fondly because we just had that real good vibe in the team. So yeah, I think 100%, if you can get that, then it can go a long, long way. These camps are quite key to those type of things, like getting to know each other. And yeah, there was no football, there's no FIFA action this year. Who brought it in 22? Somebody, I can't remember who brought it up, but that was, I don't know if you remember, but like Pipo was really bad, Omar Fraile was really bad, but then like Dylan and a couple of the other boys were quite good. But that's good as well, a bit of off the bike sort of rivalry and competitiveness is always good.
It's probably time for you to go and pack your suitcase for Portugal, but there is one more thing that we need to mention, and you've done pretty well getting this far through the pod without mentioning it, and that is the scoreline at Twickenham on Saturday.
Well, yeah, I knew you were going to bring this up. Typical. But no, to be fair, there was a lot better than I was expecting, you know, double figures to be losing by. But the boys were just were really good, weren't they? You know, it was, England keep going about, oh, it's a young team, we've had a lot of changes. Mate, have you not seen Wales? Come on. Like, but anyway, yeah, it was a great effort. And the fact that, like, you know, winning for so long as well, leading for so long. But fair play. They gave it a good old bash, didn't they? Well, it didn't quite come off, but yeah, the future looks good, mate. Future looks good.
Well, if you fancy a little bit more analysis of the Six Nations, we have a brand new podcast, For the Love of Rugby, which goes into every single match, both before and after. You can download this week's episode, in which Ben Youngs, England's most capped men scrum half, chews the fat about England-Wales with Justin Tipperick and with me as well. So just search For the Love of Rugby wherever you get your podcasts. In the meantime, G, go and fill your boots. Have fun on the Algarve. Hope you come back feeling fitter and stronger than you went there. And enjoy it. It's the start of another year.
Yeah, here we go. Looking forward to it. I've got to pack for all sorts of weather, though, because we go to Sierra straight after that, up in the snow, and then over to Italy for Strada. So big 3 weeks coming up, but can't wait. Catch you next week.
Network, a place where you belong.